Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Pretty big day when the Oilers beat the Nashville Predators. They lost 13 in a row, I guess, or lost your overtime, lost 13 in a row.
Yep.
And finally beat those guys. You know, they deserved better last game, Bruce, I thought.
Yeah.
They had double the grade A chances, and it was just a matter of goaltending. This time, I don't think it was a matter of goaltending, although Koskinen played very well. I just think the Oilers were a slightly better team today, and the score reflected that. They had 15 grade A chances to 13 for the Predators, and the Predators got some of that back in the third period when they were desperate to come back. So there's a little bit of score effects in there. Looking, the Predators look even a little bit better than I think they were. Edmonton was very, very strong that game. Bruce, what was your good thing? We're going to do the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. So what was your good thing that game?
Today I got to go with the birthday boy, Leon Draisaitl, who scored two goals, including the game winner. That's a nice birthday present for anyone. And there's something special about the game-winning goal, even though it's been roundly relegated to the dustbin of important stats. But when you score the one that's more than the other guys, to me that has value. Call me old-fashioned. I gave the Oilers a 4-1 lead at the time, a nice even strength goal at a rooftop corner. And turned out they needed all three of that three-goal lead, and they wound up basically winning by one with the late empty netter. That was, of course, Leon's second goal of the game. He potted one earlier on the power play. And I was happy with his game overall. I thought he was very engaged in the game. I thought his line was more effective. They were carrying way more of their share of the play. And it was all told a good day for Leon and Toby Reeder, who just had his second straight two-assist game.
You know who Draisaitl looked like, Bruce? He looked like Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah. Well,
finally.
That's finally nice. That's what we want.
Yeah. He's fully capable of playing this way, and it was very disappointing, frankly, the first six, seven games of the season when he looked like an imposter. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's finally getting the right line mates. Maybe that's it. You know, finding two guys who really – he's got no choice now but to carry the puck, Bruce. I mean, and haul it up the ice, because Reeder and Chiasson aren't really going to do that. So, and maybe they needed kind of a glue player in Chiasson on that line, someone who's just going to go to the net and hit and muck it up a bit. But whatever the case, maybe Draisaitl just needed to be roundly criticized by every Oilers fan there was. But he finally did wake up, and it's good to see.
Not quite every Oilers fan. I got a good bit of grief from a couple of Leon diehards for deigning to criticize him a couple of points along the way. But a little secret here, Leon is he's my favorite Oiler, I think, in the human division. I mean, how can you not love McDavid, obviously? But I got to call it as I see it. You know, it's part of the gig here at the Cult of Hockey. And when guys are struggling, you can't just cover for them and say, well, he's got a point of game or whatever. He was not really getting the job done for a few games, and the team, they desperately need him, right? They got two scoring lines, and they need them both going to consistently come out on top.
Yeah, I really agree on the just saying what you see from the player that game. Mm-hmm. And there's some people who can watch a player, let's say Chris Russell, for instance, and they will never see anything, never could admit or never say anything that he had a good game or played well or mm-hmm. And it's just not the case with any of these players. Actually, they're all kind of on a roller coaster of some sort.
Yes.
Some bigger roller coasters than others. You know, I've been full of praise for Oscar Kvarnström this year. Last mm-hmm. year, he was weak much of the time. I just think you just have to figure out a way to rate the players and be true to that. So, Bruce, the player that I liked today was Mikko Koskinen.
Mm-hmm.
And he made some pretty good saves. Nashville had 13 grade A scoring chances. He let in three. So that's not a bad, you know, it's usually they score on about 1 in 4 of grade A chances. So that's a pretty good ratio right there for him. And what I noticed, Bruce, maybe I was just imagining things, but he is so huge in the net. Mm-hmm. It seemed to me that Nashville was choking their sticks a bit more, trying to make the perfect shot. and missing the net on some good chances because of it. Now, maybe that's just was just luck, or maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's how it looked to me. Like they looked up, they see this huge mass of man in net, mm-hmm. and they think, oh well, I better thread the needle, and you end up not making your shot when that happens. So
unless you're Philip Forsberg, apparently, but I scored all three goals for the Preds today. But Koskinen, I mean, you're not imagining that he's a huge man. That is quite apparent. The other thing that we didn't imagine today was how quickly he moved his feet across the bottom of the net. There was a couple of bang-bang plays where I thought they were just going to beat him to the far side post and slam it home. And he got his big old pad out there and kicked a couple of those aside or disrupted the pass. He got right into the danger zone with his legs and shut down a couple of very dangerous looking scoring chances.
It was as strong a goaltending performance as we've seen this year. Now it wasn't better. Talbot's had a couple of really good games as well, mm-hmm. but that was as good as Talbot's played this year. So that's really encouraging that they should have no hesitation at all going back to him next week. Hopefully we won't have to wait another
month.
And Bruce, this kind of segues into my bad thing, okay. because I know the coach is, the coach has got to win, right? He's got to win or he's going to be losing his job. And that's just the fact of the matter. But he does seem to be just riding players. And he was right. We didn't see Koskinen until now. And Talbot's played game after game after game. And Oscar Klefbom, who has been playing tremendous hockey at even strength this year. Very impressive. But he played 30 minutes. Now, some of those, most seven of them, I think, were on the power play. I think more than four minutes were on shorthanded. So there is these kind of shorthanded minutes, though, are extremely hard minutes. And power play minutes aren't, of course. But 30 minutes a game, like, wow. Well, it's not the exception. It's not the exception to what seems to be the rule right now. It's just that he played this guy half the game. And I can't say I love it even as much as I love Klefbom's play. I just think this is asking for trouble.
Well, what's he do tomorrow for an encore? Does he come back and play another 30 in that back-to-back situation? And does he have how much gas in the tank? But that said, I mean, he's really got the top four he's relying heavily on. And today it's never been more than this. I mean, Oscar played 30 minutes and 15 seconds, and second on the team was Chris Russell at 18:42, like a 12-minute gap between Oscar and everybody else. Like, I've never seen anything quite like that under McLellan. But as I say, it was over 12 minutes of that time was on special teams, basically 8-4, plus another 18, which led the defense corps at even strength. You talk about penalty kill being taxing. And it is when the puck's in your own end. One good thing about it is defensemen generally don't have to skate a whole lot. Like when they do dump the puck down, they can get a little bit of a rest while the forwards go in and forecheck and so on. So both special teams, there's a lot more stationary play, but still 30 minutes is, I mean, is he Ryan Suter? Maybe he is. Maybe we're just finding out about him now.
Is that what Suter plays the game? Does he get up there average?
He's up 28, 29, 30 many, many nights. And he's just a hoss, and he just brings it, big. But part of that is efficiency. Most of the guys that play the big, big minutes have, they play in a rocking chair, as Low Tide puts it sometimes, and they just, just get the puck, move the puck, and they're not busting their tail every one of those 30 minutes, but they're just in the right place, doing the right thing. And Oscar's been doing the right thing a lot.
Well, he's been playing that kind of game.
Maybe
this isn't a bad thing. It's kind of leaping out at me right now. And in combination with playing McDavid so much, playing Talbot so much, mm-hmm. just riding these players so hard, it makes me wonder. But we'll see how that turns out. If I had Garrison and Benning as my third pair, I might be tempted to play this snot out of the other guys as well, Bruce. Bruce, what is your stat? What is your number?
My bad thing.
Oh, no, wait, your bad thing. Sorry, your bad
thing. Yeah, it's all right. And it was that one awful, ugly sequence when both Draisaitl and Larson went down the tunnel literally seconds apart, both gushing blood from head wounds. And it, you know, it's just not pleasant to see at any time. And the aggravating part, which eventually they got right, but unfortunately not soon enough for Adam Larson, was the obvious Ryan Johansson high stick to Draisaitl. What was he doing? He just reached up and carved him in the face. Like there was no bouncing off his stick. There was nothing. He just whacked him in the face. And all the refs somehow missed it. I mean, all he could hear was the stick on his, you know, visor and under his visor. I think judging from where the cut was right on the edge of his eye. Those are scary. And they didn't call it. So like 2 seconds of play continued on and a shot got fired up the middle of the ice and deflected right into Larson's face. And then he went off gushing also. And he missed the rest of that period. And I was more than a little nervous of, you know, what happens if he's got a, you know, broken orbital bone or, you know, what happens on some of these things. And, I mean, there's no plan B for Adam Larson. The team just doesn't have a right shot defenseman that's really capable of top 4 minutes. They got 2 or 3 third pairing options. And for the top four, they're really counting on Larson, who's been playing really well in my view. But there's only one of them. And, I mean, Chris Russell does the thing, and he flips sides, and often he gets the job done. But he's not that natural workhorse righty that Adam Larson is. So the two of them going off, and I will give the refs credit. They almost got it right. Calling 4 minutes on Johansson. To me, that was a major for high sticking in a game misconduct because like, there just was no excuse for it at all. He just basically slashed an opponent in the face.
Yeah, he went full Ryan Kessler on that play.
That was gross.
My stat, Bruce, is my number for the night is going to be number is 25. And that's the number of major contributions Milan Lucic has made this year to grade A scoring chances. And to put that into some context, Bruce, so this is both power play and even strength combined. Connor McDavid has 46 such contributions.
Yeah.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has 31. Lucic has 25. Leon Draisaitl has 23.
Wow.
So Lucic is ahead of Draisaitl mainly because of the power play. On the power play, Lucic has 13 and Draisaitl has 6. And Draisaitl finally got going a bit more on the power play this game.
Yes, he
but,
did.
But, man, I've liked ever since he moved back to that third line, and I don't know what it is. Maybe they motivated him. Maybe he's in the right combination. But he's just playing with a lot more confidence. He's looking like a player that not everyone's going to bitch about constantly. He's looking like a player. If he keeps playing like this, he's looking like a player who people might say, you know, he's kind of earning that $6 million per year. He's a really valuable player to this hockey team. And that's what he has been the last few games. He is an intimidating player. He's hitting, he's hustling, and he's making plays with the puck. It's the most impressed I've been with Milan Lucic since he joined the Edmonton Oilers.
I thought he was tremendous in today's game. And your scoring chance to show him at 6 contributions for 0 against. And I just saw, you know, shift after shift of winning battles along the walls and the corners and making good plays. You know, that pass out front to the Draisaitl on the power play goal, you know, and that was his third handle of the puck in that sequence. Before that, he made a good long pass back to the point through traffic. And he... my take on it is this. If you're unhappy with the way Milan Lucic played in this game, maybe the problem is with you and not with him. I got the issues with the contract, but judge the man on what he's doing on the ice. And today he had a very, very strong game, and he's been playing pretty well. And I don't like the contract either, but I sure hope that he comes as close as possible to delivering on it.
Yeah, that contract is iffy, and it always was iffy, and people said that from the start. Nonetheless, heck of a game from Draisaitl, or from Lucic, I should say, and hopefully he can keep that up. Bruce, what is your number?
Okay, my number has to do with all the shots that Edmonton has been blocking, and it's game after game. Today, Nashville had 63 shot attempts, and Edmonton had 56, but the shots on net were 35 to 27 for Edmonton. That's because Edmonton blocked 20 shots and Nashville 10. In their previous game that they took out Washington, Washington had 68 shot attempts, and Edmonton had 54, but the shots on net were 32-32, dead even, because Edmonton blocked 25 shots and Washington just 12. Game before that, Pittsburgh, the shots were attempts were 71 for Pittsburgh and 68 for Edmonton, but Edmonton actually outshot real shots 46-31, a huge gap for Edmonton, because they blocked 23 shots to just 7 for Pittsburgh. And you go back to the Nashville game before that was, I think the shot, block shots were 18-12. And on you go. It's clearly a big part of Edmonton's game. And if you hate the block shot game, you're probably not going to like that aspect of it. But the fact remains that shots are not getting through to their goaltenders. And Edmonton's shots are getting through at the other end. And
what's not to like about a block shot? Like, honestly, Chris Russell has been leading the way there. He got in the way of some lightning bolts today. I mean, he must be singed. It's kind of awesome the way he's willing to stand in there, and then he just keeps playing and playing and playing. He must be so bruised up.
Yeah, he blocked 5 against Washington, and then 6 today against Nashville. And you know, those are 2 of the very best teams in the league. And every little bit of help that your defenders can give your goalies is, to me, a good thing.
I think they should, if you don't think block shots are important, ask an NHL goalie what he thinks of it, because I think Cam Talbot and Mikko Koskinen might be a little bit thankful for that kind of support.
And sure, in a perfect world, you have, you know, Drew Doughty and Victor Hedman on your first pair, and the puck is never in your own end, ever, and you're always carrying the play and rushing the puck. But you're not going to have 6 defensemen like that in the NHL. The Oilers are lucky enough to have 2 or 3. And so you need different guys to play different roles. And all the D-men are hanging in there and getting in the way of shots. And some of the forwards are chipping in as well.
All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. We have a game tomorrow, Chicago. We're going to have a later night podcast on that, because I have 2 games in a row to coach tomorrow. So,
in Edmonton.
Yeah, hockey day for me for sure. So thanks, Bruce, for talking tonight.
Hey, David, 5-3-1 after 9 games, and hands up everybody who saw that coming, and mine isn't one of them. Wow. Especially when they start off 0-2. So this is a great survival mode for Oilers fans for the toughest month. Honestly, it's the toughest schedule I think I can ever remember for a month.
All righty. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.